This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Country Duty Show on CliffCentral.com. My name is Dumi Sole.
Hello, 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 South Africa. It's been too long.
The world. This is an app-based.
Oh, okay, my bad. The world. Hey, keeping us local.
Yes, yes. It has been a while since we did a live show and stuff, and it's really because there's been so much that's been happening. But we're here, we missed you, and would really like to get in touch with you.
Hi, my name is Katleho, and Twitter handle at @handful_K with Dumisole at Dumisole, CountryDutyZA. #CountryDuty.
Yes, and please do send your tweets and tag at Dumisole, as Katleho said, @handful_K and @CountryDutyZA, including @CliffCentral.com, so that we can pick them up on the screen and ensure that we read them for the show. It's actually good to be back.
It is.
I realize that one has missed this and being behind the mic and stuff, but hopefully we'll keep the momentum. But I do think, however, that we should tell our listeners that we are only going to do two live shows per month going forward, and the rest will be podcast. And the real issue, really, or the reason rather, would be to ensure that we are able to maintain what we do online and ensure that we keep up with some of the stuff instead of us being here every Wednesday and running with the shows. So hit us up.
Petrol is like on the rise on the side, and living costs and all of these things and ish.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter has been a buzz as well on this Tumamina or New Mamina, as someone has said. and interestingly, a host of things are happening. And it's said that at times, and really funny, that they get attributed to the Commander-in-Chief of the South African National Defense Force. If it's not petrol hikes, it's VAT increases. If it's not that, it's rains during winter. It's effectively almost everything.
Everything, whatever can go wrong.
Yeah, but we definitely need someone to blame. But the question really is it a fair thing to blame him, or we need to have a few people that we call out to order and just basically say they must come and fetch their elves, and more importantly, come up with proactive solutions? And this is what we've been about and what we ultimately seek to do.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
What have you been up to?
Finding work, bro. Finding work.
And how's that going?
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I'm so tired actually right now. I'm half asleep.
Hey, man.
There's a lot, man. Like, I was thrown literally in the deep end. I mean, I know I went there and I was like, yeah, I can do that. But now I'm just drowning.
Okay. So you were finding work? You found work?
I found work.
That's good. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And that's good to hear. And what have I been up to?
What have you been up to? Because little online, like, you've become very scarce.
Yeah, Joe, Mereko, WMC has proper requirements and demands. So, and to our followers, really, you know, Twitter is there. It's ongoing. We have not forgotten about you. But there are other responsibilities as well. So do bear with us if our responses are delayed. We are hoping to catch them, especially in the morning. So it's best for us if you want to catch us from 5-4 o'clock in the morning until 8, that's where you most likely are going to get hold of us. Lunchtime and any time after 5.
That's 5 o'clock in the morning, summertime, right?
Anytime. but that's really the essence. And unless there are breaking news or other pressing issues, we'll be able to pick them up during lunchtime or after work. But we are there. Do not think that we've forgotten and stuff. Because at the end of the day, as we always say, Country Duty is about you and it's you. And it is important that you bring issues to the fore and not only complain, but also offer proactive solutions to problem. And I think that's exactly what we'll try and do today with our guest and you know, communicate a little further.
Mm-hmm.
And who's our guest?
So today we've got Dumile. This guy's surname, wow. Mzumela. And he's a very, like, he's an old friend of mine, and I've never actually known how to say his surname, but he's going to be joining us. He's an economist, and we're going to be talking about why is South Africa now all of a sudden a Woolworths inside, you know? Like, it's cold, it's expensive, it's just not friendly to us, and how do we survive, how do we make it through, and yeah, the reasons behind it.
100%. And I think it's key that we discuss that. And I don't think, you know, we, as it often happens online. We complain, we talk and stuff, but we don't really look at the ultimate factor and the impact. I don't even know if there are solutions given where we are. What I know for a fact, however, is people are drowning and we are really approaching a ticking time bomb. Mm. People, some have received increases, some haven't, and it's hard because how do they then deal and adjust to these type of issues and stuff. So do hit us up. Our WhatsApp number is 079-748-2090. Studio line
0861-555-189. Just because you've been gone doesn't mean you shouldn't know this number.
No, I just wanted to make sure that you say it, and I think we are aligned insofar as that is concerned. So do send your tweets at Dumisole at @handful_K, tag at @countrygtza, including at cliffcentral.com, so that we can pick it up on the screen and tell us what you've been up to. More importantly, what is it that you like to bring to attention, and what do you think of the recent increases, and how do they affect you?
You know, like, I can see all the recent increases that are happening, but what irritates me, or what gets to me the most right now, is what's happening with all the fraud and corruption, you know. I'm speaking specifically towards the directors, but say our favorite bank, VBS, you know, and how we actually, I know I came out here, and remember when Osrami was still with us as well?
Yes.
And we were like, no, man, yeah, these people are good, and they tried to do good, and then turn around and... what a slap in the face, you know, like, I've got humble pie and I had to eat my humble pie very much.
Yeah.
I actually really was hoping that they would be the kind of people who you can say, we're supporting black business and we're supporting black banks and we're supporting our black people in their fight and their struggle to come up and be somebody. And now you find out that they've actually come out and they just squandering it. And what a shame.
But I think it's important in my view. What's key is that people's stance on VBS, and let's just be frank, and as far as I see it, we're excited that there was a mutual bank, you know, black owned and stuff. There were certain things that were unknown and suddenly, you know, became public knowledge. But it also is important, I think, in my view, to then say, you know, had we known what we know, certain stances would not have been taken. But now that we know what we know, that's why we're able to talk about it and say, people must be jailed, monies must be returned to the people, and ensure that there's accountability. So, humble pie, I don't think we should be feeling ashamed and saying that we're eating humble pie. There are lessons learned, things happen. I mean, we can go further and talk about the recent Competition Commission and Tribunal fines on your biggest newspapers and companies. You know, it's business as usual. They take 10.5 million or so, they pay, and then they go. And it doesn't even make the news, you know, and that's it. VBS finds itself in a very interesting predicament. It's public money and all of those things. But also the competition effect is there, because it then means there's less entering to the market and other related things. But all these things need obviously discussion on their own, and it is important that we then get to discuss it and see how it goes.
You know, it's an NFN. I mean, Lebo McKinsey, you know, and you have the thing about it is that it's the top people who are supposed to be stopping the corruption, rooting it out, or preventing it from happening, who are actually involved in the allegations that are being brought through. And I'm going to use that word very loosely, the allegations, because like what's happening with McKinsey as well is the money that they say that they took was erroneously taken, and they want to bring it back, but they want to set their terms and conditions about how they want to go and rectify their wrongs. You which can't set your own punishment as a wrongdoer. You know, you need to sit down and say, "I did something wrong," and well done for coming up and saying we did something wrong, we're sorry. But you can't tell us how we are supposed. There's laws and 100%. Regulations that are set as to how measures and what corrective measures are taken by people who do wrong. You don't set your own kind of punishment. That's just nonsense.
100%. Dumilo, welcome to the Country Duty Show. You are not a stranger on these streets, and you've been with us before and all of that. But yeah, how have you been?
I'm good. Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah.
It was a great experience the last time. I'm hoping for kind of a repeat performance.
Yeah.
I'm good. I I'm cognizant of all these issues we're going through in this country.
Yes.
What's quite interesting is that, in my opinion, they're not new issues.
Indeed.
You know? I think it's an exciting time because of technology and social media, that all of these things are like front and center. Whereas I think historically they just used to, you know, disappear in the background, you know, there'd be a room somewhere and people would negotiate and then they'd walk away scot-free.
Yeah.
And now we actually get to have an opinion on these issues, you know. But I think, as you were saying, it's a ticking time bomb, long time coming, these conversations. And it's good that we have platforms to have these conversations finally. So I'm excited, even though I know times are rough.
Indeed. But I mean, let's get straight to it. I mean, what we're talking about is the increasing, you know, petrol prices, increasing standards and cost of living and everything. I mean, I actually feel that I'm drowning. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And it may well be that I'm seen as a privileged black middle class. I can't imagine people who are not there or who are experiencing
living
it
below
very
the,
hard.
The minimum rate.
100%. Yeah. You know, what does this mean to them, and what impact is there? So we'd definitely like to hear your views. As I said, our WhatsApp number 079-748-2090. Send us your tweets at countrydutyza, tag at Dumisole, at Dumile, at handful_K, at cliffcentral.com, so that we are able to pick up the tweets live on studio.
And you can use our hashtag countryduty, hashtag rising costs.
100%. So how did we get here? I know that it's just a random question and stuff. Or maybe before even how did we get here?
Yeah.
Let's just deal with basic concepts from an economics perspective.
Right.
For someone who is young and a matric or recently first year student at WITS, going for second semester or UCT or wherever for that matter, if we talk about inflation in simple means, you know, layman terms and explanation, because I think even some of us, we take these things for granted. Yeah. What is it?
So, inflation is basically an index. So, in a nutshell, what Statista does,
yes,
with consultation from a couple of people, independent economists, from Treasury, et cetera, is that they compile a basket of goods.
Yeah.
And what they do is they take an average basket of South African purchases. They then make a determination. And this is, it's something that's in debate. So you'll never actually get a good answer of whether the basket is the right basket or the wrong basket.
100%.
But they basically take a basket of goods.
Yeah.
And what they basically trying to do is to say, what does the average South African buy? Bread,
yes,
milk, bond, electricity, etc. And what they do is that they'll anchor that index depending on how far back they want to look at. Usually it's a year or it's month on month.
Yeah.
And what they'll basically do is they'll say, last month the cost of bread was 10 rand, this month it's 12 rand, therefore we have a 20% inflation. But they don't do it on just the price of bread, they do it on the price of that entire basket of goods. So it's basically how, on average, prices have increased or decreased over time.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay, sure. And I mean, you spoke about an average South African and stuff. That would, in my view, take into account the men on the street to a certain extent.
It tries to. And this is the intense debate. And a lot of people, I mean, I've read actually over the last year, a lot of people who advocate for different baskets. Because what is important or significant to the man on the street, and also the man on the street, it's many men.
It's very,
it's very 100%. Men. You know, you find that student at WITS who may actually come from a decent family, versus an working adult who comes from nothing, a struggling background, and black tax, etc., etc. Those people have very, very different baskets. You know, for someone, they shop and they're only looking for subsistence goods. Somebody else is including things like alcohol, etc., etc. And for different people, luxury is a different thing. For different people, subsistence is a different thing. So there's been a call to say, why don't we have different baskets? And at the moment, we keep one basket, honestly, because it's easier to then deal with the data.
That's really the deal. But it may well have consequences, and it's not a good measurable to a certain extent.
Correct.
And it is what it is, unfortunately. Yeah. So that's inflation.
Mm.
And obviously, that would have an impact on the men on the street.
Correct.
Does then inflation, to a certain extent, influence other things? Does it, to a certain extent, talk to the price and the pricing and stuff? How does it tie in? And I mean, as I said, we will deal with this while we head on. But now that we know what inflation is, what impact does it have on other things like your cost of living?
It's a massive indicator.
Yeah.
It influences mostly where businesses spend their money.
Okay.
And the reason is that it's a leading indicator for both government and for business around what they think is going to happen in the future of a country.
Yeah.
So the central bank uses inflation as one of their biggest leading indicators, according to two big things that they look at. They look at the repo rate.
Yeah.
And how they basically cost our debt, you know, how your borrowing is going to be priced is based on inflation largely. And then there is kind of a look then from a government perspective, if they understand where debt is going to go and how that's going to look at, they then can decide over a long term where they'll invest. Same for companies.
Yeah.
So a lot of what's going to happen in your personal life around what you earn and how much money you make
100%.
Is very tied into the inflation rate.
It
also influences kind of long-term decision making around if it's going to continuously climb.
Yeah.
Do you want to be keeping rands as your currency? Do you want to be keeping other things? But the biggest thing for the average person on the street is that inflation will determine how much money you make and how you spend the money you make. So that's, it's a huge, huge, huge number.
It is. I mean, when we talk about inflation, I'm reminded, amongst other things, Zimbabwe.
Yes.
I mean, and that situation. Mm. I mean, there were discussions or terms such as hyperinflation and stuff like that. What is hyperinflation, if one may ask? And the reason I ask this is, given the rising costs and how consumers are strained to a certain extent,
right?
Is there a possibility, or does it mean that we may find ourselves there, where rand to a certain extent is valueless, and suddenly you spoke about currency that we are now trading on Zim dollars to a certain extent.
I've actually spoken to people, and I don't mean to cause a panic.
Of course,
who say it's valueless today? You know, who will look at where we are versus where we were, say, 10 years ago,
100%,
and they will say this rand has no value.
No,
hyperinflation is a huge, huge risk.
Yeah.
It's happening as we speak in Venezuela, as you know, because their country is falling apart.
Yeah.
So hyperinflation basically is when inflation becomes so extreme and mostly in the minds of people more than in reality, that people give up on the currency.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that in order to keep doing business, businesses will say, look, I don't trust the rand, but I need to do business.
Of course.
So I will take as many rands as you have.
Yeah.
And my pricing then stops going from 5 rand or 10 rand an item to 1,000 rand, 1,000,000 rand an item.
Shit.
Because they're just trying to keep businesses open.
Yes. Yeah.
And what is usually happening around that time is that most people with money are trying to run away from that money. So they're dumping it.
Yeah.
And the value then, as you say, goes to nothing. Yeah. But it's usually, it's when people lose so much confidence in the currency that we're using in the country, that they abandon it and it just becomes a worthless entity.
100%. And it makes sense.
Very scary.
where we at right now as South Africans? One of the things I remember recently, one had tweeted, and I said, you know, a caring government of some sort. We have a VAT at 15%. We have rising petrol hikes. We have certain things as they are and stuff. And someone took exception to say, well, clearly you don't understand basic economics.
Yeah.
Why are you dragging government on petrol prices and stuff like that? Now, for someone who's sitting and listening to the show and who will listen to the show via podcast or otherwise, And in your view, do you think there's any link or otherwise regarding petrol and government's involvement? And the reason that I ask is, men on the street, including myself, will say, listen, surely government should do something. Mm-hmm. And it plays an important role, and it stops with them to a certain extent. And related to that is, in 1993, the National Party was still in power. The ANC issued a statement basically condemning an increase in petrol prices, mm-hmm. and spoke how it will have a negative consequence. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 2018, and they are now a governing party, and we're seeing all this crap.
Yeah.
You know, and someone who has taken exception to me, how does that work, and where does government and petrol increases fit in, if at all?
So there's two places where you find the government when it comes to petrol increases. The one is that they're in charge to an extent, not completely,
yeah.
but they are the custodians of the currency, you know.
Okay.
So the policies in theory that they make then determine how a country will behave or run, and that then determines productivity, yes. and as a long-term result, your currency performs or declines based on government performance.
Yeah.
That's the one area. The other area is that, and I'm sure most people are aware at this stage because I've seen it everywhere, mm-hmm. is that the petrol price has got multiple components. You
yes.
know? So there's the oil price, which is the kind of the foundation of the petrol price. Then there are indirect taxes.
Yeah.
And then there's other levies and VATs. There's transport costs, et cetera, et cetera. But about, and I should have double-checked this number, but it's about 5.30 is mm-hmm. indirect taxes, mostly... It's the fuel levy,
yes,
which I think is 1 rand something odd,
yeah.
and then the balance is the road accident fund.
Uh-huh.
I stand to be corrected, but yes,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the road accident fund derives is X it's, amount. I yeah. mean, it doesn't, and it talks amongst other things where there's a certain percentage of fuel levy and stuff that goes to the road accident fund, yeah. but we get told that it's broke.
Correct.
And they're buying chairs.
They're buying chairs.
That it's ridiculous,
yeah.
you know, and there's like accountability. Exactly,
yeah.
there's an accountability issue. In fact, one of our former country duty troops as well had actually put in a tender for that as his own business and stuff. And the chair, the prize, I think he had proposed, if not 15 or 20 rand per chair. And we saw the cost.
600 plus.
How does it get to that? It doesn't make sense.
And I think this is where the outcry around government is to say, yeah. there's a good 5 rand that you could relieve us with on a litre, and you are not, but you are misusing that money.
Yeah.
And that I think leads to a lot of that frustration.
Yeah.
I'm not in that camp personally.
Yes.
Because what people are really feeling is actually the change in the petrol price. It's 100%. Not necessarily the petrol price itself. And if you look at our petrol price relatively around the world, we're actually relatively cheap, which is the scary part. You know, if you look versus Europe, look versus China, we're relatively cheap comparatively because of less government controls and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Our biggest problem is that we're a oil dependent country. We're not in charge of really the petrol price,
mm-hmm.
or the largest component of the petrol price, which is the oil price. You know,
100%.
We buy Benkud in dollars. We don't buy in rands. We don't buy in any African currency. And so when global market forces are pushing that price up, we are price takers.
Yeah.
You know, the other side of that is that even as much as I say that the government is to a large extent the custodian of the rent,
yeah.
they are not completely in charge of that as well. You know,
100%.
So I hope I'm not getting too technical, but
yeah.
we're currently in the middle of a trade war. The Americans and the Chinese are fighting each other.
Yes.
Unfortunately, South Africa, we're in the receiving end of that because we're an emerging market.
100%.
And as a result, we look like a scary investment destination.
Yeah.
So we lose money based on those kind of things. Our rent goes through the roof.
Yes.
Then petrol price also goes through the roof. Mm. And that's what we're really feeling fundamentally. So, yes, there's a good argument to be made for the road accident fund and
yes.
the fuel levy to be monitored better. But I don't think... we are in the position where if we fix those things, the rest of it fixes itself. You know, if the trade war continues, we're going to get to that area.
100%.
If Donald Trump continues to fight with the Middle East countries, we're still going to this place.
No, I hear you. But I mean, the long and short of it, to a certain extent, is government role is there one way or the other.
There
insofar
is,
as,
yes.
Petrol, and it can be dismissed outright.
Yeah.
All right, and thank you for that. But what now? I mean, the VAT increase. How does it come about? And especially for people who dictate policy, and people who say we care about the people, and this is what we're doing, and we want to ensure that there's stability in the country. You know, a man on the street is feeling this pinch. So let's talk about VAT and normally what is vettable and what is non-vettable.
Yeah.
And I think it links with your inflation basket to a certain extent.
Great.
And how people spend money. Mm-hmm. Can you just take us through that and what it means in basic terms?
So we've had, I think for 25 years or 24 years, if I'm not mistaken, we've had VAT at 14%. So it's never moved. And it's always been an area of where depending on the economic situations we're in, that debate comes up once in a while. I think I can track at least 5 times where I've seen it in a budget speech where they've suggested, do we do the VAT rate? The VAT rate is a difficult conversation because it is a sales tax that is applicable on everyone, right?
Yes.
So unlike your income tax or your tax on fuel or other things, this is a tax on anybody who buys anything, you
100%.
Know? The idea being that there are certain goods like bread that are exempt of this. I think it's 16 items.
Yes.
That are non-VAT items.
Yeah.
So, and I've had this conversation, and I've tried to, without being difficult, try to discuss this VAT issue.
Yeah.
So, VAT as an opportunity area has always existed, but there's always been the concern that because VAT affects everyone, that the poor will be the worst affected by VAT.
And surely that is true.
That is true to an extent.
Okay.
But you still have to understand that without this VAT increase, our government is non-funded, and that has a greater extent on poor people.
Yeah.
So at the middle of last year, to everyone's shock and horror, there was a 50 billion rand deficit with what government has budgeted and what SARS is collecting.
What does a deficit mean for someone who's listening and myself who's not an economist to a certain extent?
So government on an annual basis has programs that they run, and as a consequence of the programs that they run, everything from your grant system to your healthcare, education, everything that is called public anything, public health, public school, etc. Billions of programs, including, unfortunately, their salaries and perks are funded by us.
Yeah.
Two mechanisms, the main one being tax, the other one being debt.
100%.
But debt is just tax in the future.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, we end up paying for all these programs.
Yeah.
So what we had at the middle of last year is that the budget that the government needs to literally subsist and to service the country was short about 50 billion rand, which was far more than any economist had predicted. We were predicting around 28 billion, maybe. We knew it was bad, but we had no idea how bad it was. And so the idea was, where do you recruit this money today?
Yes.
You know, and this is what a few people have referred to as the Jacob Zuma hangover.
Yeah.
You know, and where do you recoup that money? Well, you try and recoup it from everywhere, from tax, et cetera, et cetera. But if you understand, and I think everyone has, not everyone, but a lot of people have done the research, is that the middle class, which forms the bulk of the tax base, is really under pressure from financial basis, from their budgets. There's very little to keep squeezing out of that by a margin. But there sits the VAT rate that has been sitting. And a 1% on that equaled about 25 billion rand in recovery.
Sure.
And so that was a way of an immediate way to kind of plug the hole, you know.
Yes.
The hole is really government. Is that government overspends, government doesn't know how to manage itself.
Yeah.
But you need today to fund the government. And that, as painful as it is, was one of the only places to get it. But the other thing is, when you consider the VAT increase, right, move from 15%, I mean 14 to 15%, which technically means for every 114 rand that you used to spend, you're spending an additional 1 rand.
Yeah.
0.0%.
Yes.
I mean, point eight percent, you know. It feels like a lot, and people make a lot out of it, but in reality, it's 1 rand out of every 115 rand spent.
But you surely know? For someone who doesn't have that 1 rand,
and it feels like a cruel thing to say, like everyone has a 1 rand. Realistically, it is not that massive an impact. The real impact that comes through is there's a big cost to system change. So Pick n Pay. Yeah. There's a lot of 14% in its pricing system.
Yes.
And then they become 15%. And so what you see on the shelf is that you move from a 13.99 and now you all of a sudden have got a 14.01.
Sure.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So they move that to a 13.49.
Yes.
And that's what you're going to feel. So that doesn't really lie at the feet of government, you know. Yeah. And I've tried to have this conversation, and we've looked at average baskets in certain stores, you know.
Yes.
So if you look at a Boxer Punch store, or you look at a Cambridge store, the average basket is somewhere between 50 rand and 100 rand for a person, and these are the people at the lowest income levels. And from a VAT perspective, they're spending 30, 40 cents additional. It's significant. But it isn't the end of the world.
Okay.
And I know people, I'm going to get hate mail.
No. I think it's very important that we discuss that.
Yeah.
But while we're there, and we'll continue just after the break, this is the Country Duty Show on cliffcentral.com. Do get in touch with us on WhatsApp 079-748-2090 and on our studio number 0861-555-189. And we'll be right back.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Country Duty Show on CliffCentral.com, and thanks for joining us. It's 19:40 on a Wednesday, and we're talking some depressing issues, rising costs and stuff.
And it's so lit in studio because people are talking about how 1% is not affecting the consumer. Huh?
But you know, this is
because it's now up to the stores. No, I'm sorry, I can't. Like, I understand the economics of it, I understand the theory of it, I understand the textbook side of it, but I'm a human being who's living the exact opposite of what the textbook and the theory is saying. It just doesn't fit. And somehow we brought you in here to come and make it fit.
No, but I think it's important that we get an expert view to tell us exactly what this thing is and stuff. And I think it's doing exactly
that.
You're
doing a great job.
Do join us and send us your comments at countryduties@a. Tag at Dumisole @handful_k @Dumile and clipcentral.com.
Hashtag country duty, hashtag rise in cost.
100%. And we'll pick up your tweets and stuff. And over to you, ma'am.
No, look, I was like, we were saying off A, right? I understand what you're saying, Horo. Okay, fine. The government only increased it by so much, but because of the pricing structure, stores or companies can only use or can only. Pricing, I don't even understand why they don't. But anyway, they can only price it to a certain way. Therefore, then opting to round it up.
Yes.
Right. So if that's the case, then why is there not a policy that can be put in or a law that can be put in to say you can only, there should be. I mean, it's a competitive thing. They should be able to tell, there should be a policy that says, fine, VAT is going up. Fine, your pricing structure is going to be 19 rand 2 cents. 2 cents doesn't exist anymore. So you can only say 19 rand. Or you can only say 19 rand 5, 10 cents. I mean, like, my whole 50 cents. It doesn't sound like a lot. But trust me, to somebody who's earning less than 3,500 rand, less than 3,500 rand, taxi fare is going up to by 2 rand, so it becomes.
So I think my point is specifically to say, look, there is inflation, there is price increases, and everybody's feeling the pinch. But to look at that, as to say that's where the pinch is coming from, it's a mistaken analysis, because the VAT possibly added on every 10 rand, you spend maybe a couple of cents, right? Uh-huh. What happens is that from a company perspective, they can't price something from 5.99 to 6.01. It won't make any sense. So they'll price it probably to 6.49, or they may price it to 6.10, but you don't see 10 anymore. You see 99 cents. So you walk in as a normal consumer, you know that whatever you were buying used to be 5.99, now it's 6.49, and you're feeling the pinch. But to then turn around and say, this is because of that, it's a mistake, because VAT only added maybe 10 cents. It's because the retail businesses are taking a little bit added advantage.
Okay, so we're supposed to now then go blame Bo Pick and Pay.
I'm in so much trouble. I know I'm going to like, I'm never going to be hired for anything again.
while we're there, and another thing that we talk about and that has a certain impact on consumers and people on the street. Yes. It's something called foreign debt and stuff. Mm. Does that feature anywhere insofar as throttling consumers and the men on the street to a certain extent? And does government, you know, in trying to manage this and dealing with it, because I think at times you are overly indebted to your world, whatever that's... Almost said colonizers. but you know what I mean. People who borrow us money and charge exorbitant interest.
Absolutely.
And stuff, and we find ourselves giving and giving, and we don't get a value and return and stuff.
So, you know, I think, and I know we don't have the time to kind of step back into this thing, is that, you know, there is a central issue at the heart of all of these conversations, right? Yes. And it actually goes back to the fact that our South African economy was built from scratch to work for a minority, you know. It used to be a racial minority. Today it is a class minority, more than racial. But historically, it's still the same economy, you know. It still has the same leading components, which is finance, services, and mining and resource. Yes. Those are things that are in the hands of the very few, you know. And so all the things you talk about around the foreign dynamics, et cetera, they would not affect a person in that environment as much as a person at the bottom of the food chain. Because what the person at the bottom of the food chain is getting is just whatever's happening. You know, if the price goes up, he just has to pay it. If things are more expensive and he can't access them, he just has to deal with it. When your salary doesn't increase over 6 months, you know, you get a very different explanation than when things, you know, you get told how, I was reading an article this morning about how 70% of mines in South Africa, gold mines particularly, are unprofitable. But it's not the case that when they were profitable about 10 years back, that they were dishing out the wealth.
100%.
And so, The common South African who's not really an economic participant is a receiver of all these issues we're talking about. And that is actually at the heart of why we always feel under pressure.
Yes.
Because if you look at South Africa on a global scale, South Africa on a global scale, we're actually one of the cheapest economies in the world, which is the scariest part.
And when you mean cheapest economies in the world, to do business in?
To do business, to live, to everything in South Africa. We are considered a very cheap kind of destination. If you come from outside of South Africa and you come into South Africa, a lot of the time you will be pleasantly surprised, you know.
Yeah.
Even from African countries, which actually I think shocked me, is that African countries like Lagos are actually more expensive to live in than South Africa, because we've got infrastructure, you've got electricity, you've got things that don't exist on the continent, running water, etc.
Yeah.
And as a result, We are relatively cheap, but we feel as your man on the street like it's ridiculous. Expensive. I can't even live in this
100%.
Country.
100%. But then it explains. And sorry to interrupt. No problem. Why certain people are no longer leaving. you know what? I can't leave. I want to leave, and I'm going, and I'm tired. And then you then do the economist, and the wealth advisor will then say, actually, and from a factual perspective, you may just want to stay here.
Absolutely.
And I think it's very interesting, and it's quite funny.
Yeah. So one of our deepest problems is actually that more than that we are indebted and that kind of thing is that we don't produce as a country.
Yes.
And we have high unemployment and we have the highest income inequality in the world, 100%. You know, which means that relatively being a billionaire in South Africa is the best place to be relatively a billionaire.
Yes.
Because you've got the highest inequality. So you can get the stuff the cheapest versus in the US or versus in Europe. And so the common South African is honestly receiving because we're not a, you're not really an economic participant.
Yeah.
You're kind of, you're labor. That's pretty much what most people are. I'm never getting,
yeah.
I'm going to get a lot of trouble.
But we need, in my view, objective facts. And this is what we do. We touch stuff that is raw, you know, provocative, but stuff that opens up the debate. I mean, one of the users here and our followers says, your analysis insofar as petrol prices and us being relatively cheap and stuff, it's a host of crap. That's what they call it. And I'm hoping, and if the person is listening, please do engage us and tell us why you disagree. Because then what it does, it assists someone else who's listening and they to say, well, you know, these are the factors and this is what it means. And this is what we need. Now, all these increases, I think, and as far as I understand you, obviously they are there and they're huge to a certain extent, but if you look at it from a realistic perspective, it's not as hectic as we say it is.
Yes.
And maybe that's why government holds a different view to a certain extent. But why do you think government is not articulating that position? You know, simply and saying, we hear you, but from a factual perspective, do it in Sizulu, Tswana, whatever language, so that We now say, okay, well, we hear you and stuff. Because right now, nothing is coming. There's no communication. And that's what's creating a problem.
I think the hardest thing with government is that they don't actually have a plan. And this is actually, I think, the heart of my proposition with whatever I research, my lens is with understanding that it's difficult for a government to speak when they don't have a plan. It's one thing that's to say important. To guys, we're not as bad as the rest of the world. Fine, but we're trending in that direction.
100%.
And so what are you doing about it?
Mm-hmm.
And from a government perspective, I mean, one thing everyone has spoken about is policy certainty.
Yes.
I think we're in our second or third mining charter in I don't know how many months, but it's literally months, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest components to the economy of this country. And it's one of the biggest employers in the country. And so if you are not clear on one of the biggest sectors of the economy, how then are you clear on what you're going to do about the rest of the country? This runs the same with finance. It runs the same with the issue of land. It runs the same with everywhere else, is that there's huge uncertainty.
Yeah.
And the government has not come out clearly, as you are saying, to articulate, to say, look, yes, this is where we are today, but this is the future we are shaping, and this is the plan and the path we're taking, and to articulate that clearly and let everybody understand, oh, okay, it maybe isn't that bad because we're just in a bad patch.
100%.
But no, I hear you. Only say that when you have a plan. Yeah. When there's no plan, you can't articulate those ideas, and that's why I think they are more quiet than they are, and I think that's what we should be more worried about
as a
country, to say, okay, sharp. It's bad. You know, what are you going to do about it? It's bad.
Where are we going?
But where are we going? Is it going to get worse?
Yeah.
Is there any turnaround strategy, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So elections are upon us. and you know, and it's going to be very interesting, be it the FFDA or otherwise. We need people with plans. Excuse me. People who would convince us as to why we should vote for them. So we are also most likely going to be in a situation where opposition parties or otherwise are going to tell us how bad things are, and it's so bad. And with a government that doesn't articulate as it ought to, we are really going to have hysteria, we're going to have issues and stuff. But do you think boycotting, and it may well change your initial position and how the man on the street sees it, boycotting government, withholding of taxes, as one of our listeners says, Jimmy_Mudisa says, listen, let's withhold taxes, it will send a strong message. Do you think it will have any impact?
That is a very difficult, yes, it will have impact,
yes,
absolutely,
yeah,
but you've got to be careful about the impact that you want,
100%.
And here's the truth, right? We are in the midst of what I, as I say, has been called the Jacob Zuma hangover.
Yeah.
We had 10 years of poor administration.
Uh-huh.
You know, in my perspective, it actually goes, it runs right into the Thambeki administration. As
I was
well.
About to say,
you know, it's probably more than 10 years.
Surely, yeah. You know, and we must at the very least, I know Zuma has always been an issue and stuff, and we know the legacy continues to a certain extent because this new guy is coming and he wants to do it. He doesn't even have time, doesn't even have the support, and he might not even be the state president because of some of the misgivings and undertaking.
Right.
But during your gear proposals that were championed by the likes of Mbeki and stuff, surely those people also should take accountability. And we're talking about a ruling party that's been there for the longest of time. And we are experiencing trying times. So the articulation or lack thereof starts from back then.
So I think you can definitely say that.
Yeah.
I think Thabo Mbeki missed, in my opinion, the biggest opportunity to transform the country.
Yes.
But that was the greatest period of economic prosperity in South Africa under his rule. And I think we just went to sleep. Politically and otherwise, the country went to sleep because...
Were we taken over by poetry and
we
Shakespeare?
We definitely were. But beyond poetry and so forth, we were taken by the fact that this was the rise of the Black Diamond.
100%.
This was the rise of people buying foreign German cars. 100%. And, you know, people could go home and be proud, and parents were saying, hey, my child is good. We thought everything was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And... My view backwards, looking at, I think probably the most educated president we've had, and
yes.
He should have had a better view and understood the economy, that it changes over time.
Yes.
And he didn't. He just ran the wave. He didn't transform. And I think what the difference with him and Jacob is, Jacob Zuma, I think, drove the biggest intellectual degeneration of the party. So you look at Thabo Mbeki, and yes, they didn't do things properly, but you look at Jacob Zuma's administration and you find it was sorely lacking in capability and in drive and political will, or, you know, in any direction.
Yes.
And so it made it so much worse than it should have been. And today what we're looking at is the nuclear after effect of that, you know, of that nuclear bomb that went off in his presidency. And so we're dealing with, and I sympathize with Cyril. You know, I think we got the honeymoon period. We thought everything was going to go well.
A few months.
And then a few months later, we realize, Chief, there's a lot to get right, you know. And so I sympathize with the president.
Yeah.
But I don't in the fact that we still don't have a plan.
Yeah.
You know, I think all those plans that were historically made have clearly gone with the wind. Even the NDP, which was supposed to be the greatest one, has now become this document you can find online, but it doesn't really live. And so I think that's his biggest role now, is to come 100%. And give leadership.
No, I hear you. And it's key. But you know, we can continue and discuss until Tumamina comes, amongst other things. And I agree with you. It's this guy is in such a state as we speak, and I don't think he sleeps much, and he shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't.
There's elections.
Unfortunately,
and he must deal with what's coming.
Send him.
Yeah, and this is what it is. But thank you for embracing us and honoring the invite. And to all our troops who've been tweeting and sharing their insights, Jimmy, we see you. See Boring _26 and everyone else, Boniso PNZ, who's
There's
been engaging us and stuff.
From Kumo Nkwana that says it's actually a meme that he took from interview that Dr. Mampela Rampela had on 702, where he said people have allowed the government to do what it wants because they think the government knows best.
Yeah.
And I think this is how we got to where we are right now.
True. Yeah. And thanks to you for listening. This has been another installment of the Country Duty Show on cliffcentral.com. Keep well. We're not here next week.
We are here next week.
And we'll catch up on Twitter and let's keep the hashtag going.
This is cliffcentral.com.